Hello, everybody, and welcome to Friends of the Force, a Star Wars podcast. I'm your host, Brad.
I'm your host, Sarah. Who would have thunk? I'm here.
And on today's episode, we are talking about The Mandalorian Season 3, Chapters 17 and 18. We are here. We are finally two years later post the incident of when Grogu left Mando. And now we are back. And Grogu is back with Mando. And things are going good for the crew.
And I am back, in parentheses, for the first time covering Mandalorian on Friends of the Force.
You did not cover the first two seasons with me.
At all.
And we had the lovely, lovely Tori Fox on for season two. Mm-hmm. Her and I did The Clan of Two, which everybody should go check out those episodes as well. We interviewed Emily Swallow, Paul Sung-hyun Lee. Like, we did some great stuff that season. And so now we're here, season three. It's going to be an exciting one. I think there's a lot of promise for this season. Sarah, we did cover Book of Boba Fett, though.
So I kind of have covered like two Mandalorian episodes.
Two episodes LOL. Of The Mandalorian. So yeah, that was a good time. You know, Boba Fett had some fun things to offer. And now I'm honestly, for myself as a big Mandalorian fan, I'm just excited to be back with Din and Grogu. And again, it really seems like season three is already a lot more focused than I think season two was in some ways. And that is kind of what excites me the most, getting back to sort of like the season one roots and what I think made the season one so successful. And so I'm really excited. And there's some really interesting things to talk about and some really good Grogu moments as well in these first two episodes today.
I mean, we could really just not cover anything else except for like spend an hour on cute Grogu moments, you know? Like a top 10 cute Grogu moments with his watch mojo. You know, like we could do that because there's always so many cute Grogu moments. Like you really can't deny his power. You know, I know we lived in a world for a while where there was no Grogu merch and we were like, wow, they're missing out. And now we're completely oversaturated with Grogu merch. But the reality is that he's darn cute.
He really is. I can't resist him. Like every time he's on screen, I tear up a little bit. It's just like a natural instinct at this point.
You're like, that's my son.
It really is. He really is, though. And now he's like starting to talk more. He's walking around. He's doing some pretty cool things. He's zooming around in his little pram. And then he's going to start talking backwards like Yoda. And I'm like, I'm out. He's too grown up now.
He's just grown Yoda. Up. Yeah. I guess that's like the big question. I feel like I've been seeing people speculate on Twitter whether he's going to talk in this season or not. And I feel like we're getting closer every day. Pelly's like side-eye emoji, you know?
That was a good moment. We'll talk more about that as
Pelly.
Well.
But
yeah. Yeah, if you're wondering, so this is season three coverage here on Friends of the Force. And rather than calling this show what we've previously called it in our coverage, we have a brand new name for the series.
It's just a theme.
And it is. Yeah, it's just a theme. It was just something that we came up with that felt right. And we are going to call this podcast series Jarin Jargon.
Jarin
and if you're
Jargon.
Wondering why, it's because we got our man, our boy, Din Djarin. And Star Wars has a lot of jargon in it. It's like a lot of names. You got Mandalore, Mythosaur.
That's right.
Kreese, Bo-Katan. Like, it just sounds ridiculous. Star Wars sounds ridiculous.
And the reality...
Sounds like a whole lot of jargon.
The reality is also, you know us. We love some similar sounds. You know, we talk about the alliteration a lot. This isn't like a pure alliteration, but it's like in the sound, it's an alliteration. I don't know if that has a word for it, but I don't have it on the top of my head, so don't worry about it. You could say it's jargon. LOL. But yeah, so we're here to call this season Jarin Jargon, and it's kind of funny because we can barely say it as well.
It's a good tongue twister, that's for sure. So we'll be covering each of the eight episodes. I'm not entirely sure how that's going to look with the schedule ahead because, you know, we have Celebration coming up and there is an episode that week. And there is a 7-hour time difference, I think yeah. From here in the UK.
Yeah.
So we might not necessarily do like one episode every week. Sarah might not always be here depending on her schedule. There might be some other guests that join us throughout the season. So it's going to be a good time. So strap yourselves in, join us every week. And we're going to talk about the things that we think might not have worked, but hopefully more so than not. We'll talk about the things that we did love and, mm-hmm. and did enjoy and did work and are working. And like I said up front, I do think there is a lot working for the season so far. And I'm really, really stoked about that because I wasn't sure what to expect. So yeah, that's sort of a look ahead. And Sarah, I know you didn't join us for or join me for season one and two, but what has your journey been with The Mandalorian thus far? And like coming into season three, I know you didn't watch season two or much of season two.
You're just
going
to tell the people that.
We watched a couple of episodes. I think we watched The Marshal because of Cobb Vanth, obviously.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that
and
one.
I think I showed you the tragedy with Boba Fett when Boba Fett shows up on Tython.
In the first season?
Second season.
Oh, second season.
I think it's like chapter 15, I believe.
I've seen that one, too. I just didn't know it was in the second
season. Robert Rodriguez.
Sorry, guys.
It jumbles together for me, too. But like coming into season three, like what are your expectations based on your experience with the show? And like, how are you approaching the series? And maybe like, what are you hoping to maybe glean from it this season specifically?
Right. So like, I think what's most promising to me about this season, and I hope that we kind of continue to work through it, is the politics of Mandalore. Now, I am not somebody who has really any expertise or background knowledge on this. I've seen probably like half to three quarters of the episodes of The Mandalorian thus far total. And I've seen a handful of some of the Clone Wars episodes that have to do with Mandalore. But it's clear to me that based on what I've seen that like Mandalore has a rich political history, and we see that already in the season with what Bo-Katan has brought and what Bo-Katan was doing in the last season as well, based on what I saw. So I'm kind of interested to see how Din navigates that in this season, especially now that we are on Mandalore, at least in the second episode. So I'll be really curious to see what happens there. I hope that's something that we continue to get, because I really didn't expect us to go to the living waters in the second episode of this season. I felt really it moved really fast. Instead of it being like a long quest to this place, it's like, okay, the quest that I imagined that, you know, we got from the Book of Boba Fett couple of episodes, and then these two episodes, thought that was going to be like the quest of the season. So it's not, clearly, but I'm really curious to see where we go from here. And I really have no expectation or knowledge of where we could go. So I kind of look forward to finding out. And as an armorer hater, sorry to the armorer, but like, she's awful. She makes cool armor for sure. Her
costume too is amazing.
Oh, her costume,
it looks great.
Like she's kind of cool, but I hate her. Like,
yeah.
I want Bo-Katan and Din to just like burn the ideology of that, you know, sect of Mandalorians like to the ground. Not necessarily the Mandalorians themselves, but like this whole take off your helmet nonsense is nonsense, guys. How are we going to moisturize our skin? Okay. How are we going to eat? How are we going to kiss, mooch, mooch? Okay. When you can't take off your mask.
I am sick of watching Din Djarin lift a little bit of that helmet to eat his soup.
I want that thing off. Respectfully, that was so dumb. Okay.
Din, what if that spills down your shirt, buddy? You run so much risk there.
If you think about the angle of the cup and how much he opened. He drank no soup. Okay. That's all I am saying.
It's probably a video on YouTube of it already about like, all the plot holes.
Right. Well, no, it's the
thumbnail is him drinking the soup with a big circle around it.
No, it's
the red circle.
It's the, could Jack have been on the, you know, the piece of wood and survived with Rose? It's like that for me. It's like, there's no way he could have drank this, the angle and the physics, like,
yeah, the Pythagorean theorem,
right? It's so silly, but yeah. So I hope that this season like takes us away from that ideology further and further, because as somebody, like just in Star Wars land, I find the characters always to be more interesting once they take off their masks. This is why the mask smash scene in The Last Jedi is so, it's my Super Bowl. It's like so thrilling for me. Like I yell at the scene like people yell at their TVs, like, yes, do it! Because he becomes so much more complex and pathetic and amazing and wonderful to watch once that happens. And we know how excellent Pedro is of an actor. So I want him to be able to show off more in this role. And I also just want to be able to see Din Djarin's eyebrows when he feels things.
Totally. You know? I agree. And like we've seen Pedro acting, you know, specifically in The Last of Us recently, and like what a performance that he's giving there.
So good.
And I'm just like, oh, I wish we could like get that out of him in The Mandalorian, because so often he's so stoic,
you know,
behind the mask and you can't read him.
You know what we need? Guys, go listen to our Gorgs episode for this year. Golden Gorgs 2023. Go listen to it, because if you have, you'll know what I'm about to say. And what I'm about to say is that he needs to go back to Omera. Okay? Okay. She will... Her presence is just a soft, calming presence. She will dull the sharp corners of his, you know, shoulder blades, you know? But we can talk about other candidates, other options in the galaxy. You know, it's a big galaxy out there.
We sure will.
There are some hot, powerful ladies and gentlemen out in the galaxy.
We'll talk.
We can just make this the Din Djarin shipping podcast and just like ship him with a new person each week and talk about the potential. I mean, if you want to do an episode on Din,
I'll ship him with anybody. I'll ship him with Cobb Vanth.
Exactly. Like
you know,
the power?
Ship him with anybody.
The power?
Yeah. That's a great ship. That is like probably one of Star Wars' best ships in recent years,
Din and Omera. Din and Bo-Katan. You know what? I'm here.
Why not?
Din
the sky's
and
the
not,
limit.
Not the armor. Okay. Not the armor. We're not doing it. No enemies to lovers. I'm sorry, but it's not happening. The armor is just not good enough for me. She doesn't exist. Who? The armor, who?
No, but you make some excellent points. I think you hit the nail on the head, and it's interesting to hear like your perspective just sort of coming into it a little bit like cold turkey in a way. And I think it's going to be a really interesting season, because that is the big question of like Din wants to go to the waters. And I guess full spoilers ahead for both these episodes and
obviously
for Book of Boba Fett and previous seasons at this point. But I mean, Din's whole thing is to go to the waters and redeem himself. But I'm like, what does he need to be redeemed for? You know,
nothing.
And his whole life, he's been raised in like a religious cult to believe that this is the way that he has to follow. And he is still so brainwashed by that. And so when will he sort of break out of that trance? And I think somebody like Bo-Katan, who is already being prominently featured in the season
with a better wig.
With a better wig, first off. Katie Sackhoff looks freaking amazing when he walked in the Mandalore throne and she had her leg propped up on the throne like Darth Maul, like in the Siege of Mandalore.
You guys weren't there because Brad and I watched the Siege of Mandalore on Zoom, and I just had never, you know, seen it. And I watched it and I was like, holy moly, he's hot.
Holy moly,
he's hot. And I felt quite similarly about Bo-Katan. I was like, oh no, she's hot. Like
there's truly nothing better than a throne spread in Star Wars.
So
we got like
it's so true.
Have Bo-Katan, we had Darth Maul, we had Thrawn on the Thrawn cover for the book, one of the books. Had the concept art of Kylo on his throne with Dark Rey.
Do not get me started.
We've had some good ones. So, and they don't stop coming is what I'm saying. But season 3 is interesting because like, I think leaving off on season 2 with the split, I think a lot of people thought, okay, well season 3 is going to be sort of these two characters on their own dealing with themselves individually. And then maybe the whole impetus of season 3 will be to like reunite.
Sure.
And obviously that happened in the Book of Boba Fett. And kind of moving forward, like I definitely have like issues with how that was presented and like where and like what order it was presented. But I'm trying to divorce myself from those feelings going into the season, because I just want to enjoy these episodes not through that lens. Because, you know, it happened. So let's kind of move forward and see like what can the story offer and like what can the story do now that they are together. Because those episodes were great in Book of Boba Fett. I think they were fantastic. They would have made great season 3 openers, But they're also like great episodes on their own. It's totally fine.
No, I think that episode 5, which I actually have really like good feelings about overall as an episode of TV, would have been a great season opener. And it would have, I don't mean to totally derail, and it would have, for me, eliminated some of the sour taste I had in my mouth of the first episode here, just because I really don't like the Armorer, and we lead off with the Armorer to start this season. And I think it would have been more interesting to see, because I think in the beginning of episode 5 of Boba Fett, he's like, he like is flying and he's going to that one ring planet, right? Am I wrong about this?
Yeah. And well, he's in like a butcher house first and he's like getting a bounty,
see,
with those guys and the Darksaber.
Are you kidding me? That would have been a banger of a season opener. Because that scene was so thrilling and so interesting. And and then like, and the sets, the worlds that they were crafting there, I think would have been great. And then you kind of have that moment. And maybe not even the next episode, because the next episode is like almost all Grogu, but like that episode into chapter 17, I think would have been a really interesting, put them next to each other, make the magic happen sort of a thing.
Right. Yeah. It is interesting. But I, you know, I'm glad that we're at where we're at and like seeing now, okay, like Din's mission is not just getting Grogu back. Okay. It is going to Mandalore and like thinking he needs to redeem himself. So like, what does that
what's next
journey look like? Right. Yeah. Right. And like, to your point, we're already there. So it's like, if we're already there, like what
where
is the rest
of the
season?
Are we going?
Like, what is happening? Like, what is going to happen? Like, if that's the big cliffhanger is a giant freaking mythosaur in the waters of Mandalore. Like, that's kind of crazy.
Okay. I have
that
some
kinda,
questions
that
about
flips
the
entire narrative around. Like, everything is off the table at this point. Anything can happen. Like, crazy.
Okay. I'm Googling the mythosaur. Okay, don't worry about it. Give me 1 second. I mean, obviously I know what the mythosaur is, but I did not realize that the mythosaur lived underwater. Was this something I was supposed to know?
I don't know much about the mythosaur myself. The mythosaur was explored in the Legends books somehow. So there might be some reading material I missed, or there definitely is.
See, I needed the mythosaur Wikipedia page prior to today. It says like, although one mythosaur survived and lived in the living waters during the time of the New Republic. No, I don't want to know that. I want to know where they were before that. Because I assume like the mines of mythosaur or the mines of Mandalore, the mythosaur lair, I was thinking something more like Smaug in, you know, he kind of like lives on top of his pile of gold, you know, like that's kind of what I was thinking for the mythosaur, I guess, based on that. You texted me and you were like, oh my God, that's how it ends. And then Michelle from Unknown Ranges podcast was like, oh my God, this episode. And I was like, guys, what are you talking about? What are you talking? Like, what are you getting at here? Nobody. And then like, nobody had spoiled it for me on Twitter. And then I get to the end of this thing and I was like, oh my God, what the fuck? Like, I didn't expect it, especially since they were allegedly tamed and ridden by Mandalore the Great. So I just didn't expect it to be a underwater sort of creature.
I don't know if that was known, but I mean, when Bo-Katan, I guess we're kind of skipping towards the big reveal here at the end, but Bo-Katan, when they enter the mines, she reads the plaque on the wall. And she does so like a little sarcastically while she's reading it, because I think she is definitely a firm non-believer of like, this is just child's play. This was something we were told as kids to like give us, you know, inspiration. It's kind of like the Han Solo attitude of like, I don't follow hokey religions and ancient, you know, folklore, that sort of thing.
And then he's like, it's true. It's all true. And Bo-Katan has that moment.
Yeah, exactly. It says the mines were a mythosaur lair, and then the Mandalore the Great tamed the mythical beast. The signet was adopted, which is, you know, the classic mythosaur signet, and became the symbol of their people. So like, yeah, I guess the fact that maybe that mythosaur was asleep for a while, or maybe there were more underneath the surfaces of Mandalore. It's interesting how long maybe that was there to never be noticed, or maybe the destruction of Mandalore disrupted the environment so much that it awakened them potentially.
Mm-hmm.
Cause we don't get to see them in like, animation when we go to Mandalore. We've never seen them like on screen,
right?
I believe.
That's why I was so
that's
shook
intense. Yeah.
I was like, oh my Lord.
I believe that the end of chapter 18, besides the Grogu reveal, which like just can't be beat, it's S tier Mandalorian. This is the best cliffhanger ending the show has ever had.
Brad, I meant to say this to you earlier, but I want you to consider the number for like 0.2 seconds, have an epiphany about
Holy shit.
Guys,
wow.
The okay. chapter 18 in Star Wars in books.
And it's literally called chapter 18.
It is.
Oh my God. Okay. Okay. Guys,
we're
going
to lay out this theory for you one day.
Yeah.
It's not
today. Can we give them like a Spark Notes version?
Spark
very
Notes
briefly?
Version. We've read a lot of Star Wars books. And for some reason, chapter 18s in Star Wars book often are like the pivotal chapter where everything changes and everything falls apart. And, you know, and I think we first noticed this with Shadowfall by Alexander Freed, where we were both like, holy, what the rickrack. And then we started realizing that other books also had really intense chapter 18s. And we have our tinfoil best tailored suits on about it. And this, even though it is not a book, it is called chapter 18. So we can add it to the theory, Brett.
We can add it to the whiteboard of
that's right. The you know, the we're all pointing at it and like all the red strings are connected. Yeah, that's right.
The newspaper clippings, the maps, all of it, you know, it's all there. So stay tuned for that episode when it eventually happens.
We've been talking about it for like a year. We'll get to it eventually. It's gonna be like a research episode.
Yeah, that's all you're getting right now though, so stay tuned. Follow the podcast if you want to hear it. But yeah, wow. This is actually though, like seriously, one of the best endings to an episode, because again, like to your point, it subverts the expectations of the season. It takes what we thought was going to be the whole season long journey and now compresses it to two episodes. And it's like, bitch, you thought,
right.
Guess what? Mm-hmm. This happens. And the way that like it leaves you off wanting to be like, I need next week's episode. I need to know what happens next. Like, what is the conversation going to be like between Din and Bo-Katan? Like, they just saw a freaking mythosaur in the water. That's crazy. So it's just really thrilling. And again, like I think the show is just tapping into an energy that I really wanted and really needed. And while I do have some criticisms, like I think the writing doesn't always flow as naturally as I would like. And sometimes it feels like people are speaking like robots to each other.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Although there are some instances where that's not the case. And I do think some of the dialogue is like very good. But besides those criticisms, I'm really vibing like with the season pretty much entirely at this point. Like I just feel like it's good. And I know we've all, you know, people talk a lot about, you know, differences in Star Wars media and, you know, what things should be and what shouldn't be. And I think it's good to have a variety of types of shows that fit different molds, you know, because each show needs to be its own thing. And I do like the campiness of The Mandalorian in some ways. I think chapter 17 was very campy, like with the pirates and with Navarro and with Greef Karga and like, you know, it's not necessarily Andor, but like, I don't think it needs to be Andor because that's not really what it sells itself to be, right? It's sort of like that adventure of the week camp feeling within Star Wars that you just sort of turn your brain off for a little bit and like enjoy the visuals a bit and enjoy the little Grogu moments. And I'm having a good time. Like, I'm really vibing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a vibe.
It's,
you know,
a vibe. I can understand that. I think one thing I want to talk about across these two episodes is the creature design.
Yes.
I mean, this goes into the conversation about the mythosaur, which really blew me away. I was like, oh my God. Okay. So the backstory, guys, is like, I watched like half of the episode over lunch and I had to watch the second half, you know, of course, before we recorded this episode. And Brad was like, I'm happy to like watch a second half with you. And I was just like, I'm so exhausted from work. I need to not exist in the world for a while. So I'm going to respectfully say no, thank you, but I love you. Like
I offered. Yes.
And, otherwise I would have, but my brain and my body were just like, okay. And we need to not exist for a while. But I watched it and I was like, okay, I get it. I get why he was saying that. Cause he wanted to see my shooketh face at the end of the episode.
I really wanted to see the reaction to the
mythosaur. I'm really sorry I denied you that.
That's all right. Yeah.
next time. But I was indeed shooketh. But, you know, throughout both of these episodes, we get some pretty interesting looking creatures. And the first one comes at the beginning of chapter 17 when we're getting the... Does our group of... Mandalorians who don't take their helmets off and therefore have terrible skin. Do they have a name, like an official name?
So they're called the Children of the Watch.
Oh, thank you.
According to Bo-Katan. Yeah, because when Bo-Katan first meets Din in season two, she's like, oh, you're one of them. Like, you're one of the children.
Okay, so the Children of the Watch, right? They're kind of like inducting a new member. So I guess the baby children don't wear their helmets until the armorer makes them one, and then they get their put their helmet on, and then the baby child, he's probably like 13, but like has his hair sticking out the bottom. How do they cut their hair? What do they do for their acne? Okay, I just have some skincare and skincare questions. But my point being is that there's a pretty large water monster that comes out and disrupts this ceremony. It looks like a dinosaur lizard. Kind of a thing, and
it was giving crocodile vibes.
Yes.
I heard it was played by Shawn Mendes. You know, Lyle Lyle Crocodile, the movie where he sings as a crocodile. Okay, never mind.
I really needed you to explain that to me, but I got it now.
Niche joke. Hopefully, a listener laughed.
I really just looked at him in the camera with like the biggest question mark expression on my face. I'm like, Shawn Mendes. I was like, did you miss say that? Like.
It's funny to see that movie. It's basically if Paddington were a crocodile, anyways, and could sing. Anyways.
But yeah, big crocodile vibes. That's right. That's what I was going for with dinosaur lizards. So I'm really glad that you got there.
It literally does like a barrel roll. It like grabs something and like does the crocodile twist.
No,
it's kind of terrifying.
It totally does. It's like a very large crocodile with like a turtle shell back. And everybody's shooting at it for a while. And I have to say, it looks incredible. It looks really cool. And it's kind of funny to watch a bunch of Mandalorians just like not do very well against this until Din comes in and is like, I'm gonna blast them with my guns, you know, like in my ship and gets them. And I'm like, you guys are so pathetic, because it was like, you know, 20 of them versus one man in the starfighter, like LOL. Okay. That was comedy. That was comedy, you guys. Do you have any thoughts about our crocodile lizard, with a turtle shell dinosaur back thing?
Yeah. Creatures. I love that we've had like two giant creatures this season thus far, but I think the Mandalorian has done the best job of creatures in all of Star Wars, live action TV, because like, you know, we got the crate dragon in season two, which was just like completely epic.
Wave.
We got the giant spiders in season two. We've gotten some really cool stuff.
No, we don't acknowledge the spiders. Sorry.
I've never seen
screenshots of what they look like, and I refuse to watch it. I genuinely don't know what the plot of that episode is at all.
The knobby whites.
All.
It's actually terrifying. As an arachnophobe, I woke up that morning and my day started with violence. Let me just say.
The crate dragon. You're right. The crate jacket is really cool.
Yeah. The creature design's always on point. And even seeing, you know, the Pirate King Gorian Shard.
Oh my gosh. He was
at the end of this episode. Listen, I would become a pirate. I would join his crew. Like, he seems like a pretty cool looking guy. And he's like basically if Swamp Thing were in Star Wars.
Exactly. Like, it felt like if you took a comic book villain like out of the comic book and put him in Star Trek, that's what it would be.
Yes.
Like, that's the vibe I got. Okay. And not in a bad way. I was like, oh my God, he's really green. He's really green. And I thought he looked so funny. But yeah, like the creature design there was obviously like really strongly conceptualized. And I have a lot of respect for that, even if I am completely unsettled by how green he is. But then like in episode 18, guys, I'm not gonna do a good job of this, okay? It's confusing for my brain. Then we have, I don't even know, it just says the creature growls, but they're on 2 feet and they're like, what is the name of the mythological creature? Oh, they're like Bigfoots with scales down their back, or like, you know.
Yeah, they're called Alabites.
Alabites. See, you have all the details that I don't have, and I just like explain things really weirdly. This is what we come to the podcast for, guys. I just explain things nonsensically, and then Brad tells me very concisely what the thing actually is. But like, there is another creature. Then of course we have the crate dragon, and then we have, what do you call him?
I call him, if Grievous were in hell.
Hell Grievous.
I honestly for a moment was like, did Grievous live? Is this Grievous? Like, I don't know what's going on here.
It feels like it walked out. It's like, to me, because we're underground, I'm going to mention something again and you're just going to be like, I can't believe you're bringing this up on the podcast. I'm here for nonsensical references. Okay. It's giving me like City of Ember plus Matrix plus Avatar, like the face changing. I can't remember the name of it. Guys, yeah. I'm really not good on any details or any names. There's nothing in my brain except BTS right now. I'm so sorry. but if you put that all like into General Grievous, that's the vibe I'm getting from this scene in this episode. Thank you.
That was like one of the wildest things I've seen in Star Wars, honestly. When that thing came out of the ground and just like took over Din and like injected him immediately with a sharp needle and like starts draining his blood out. I just did not expect that like spindly like creature to just come out of that machine with the moving eye, but it was so fascinating. It was just so fascinating to look at and also terrifying. I just am impressed. And I believe Phil Tippett was credited in this episode for chapter 18. Mm. I don't know like what capacity. I think it might've been like a visual effects supervisor or something, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was working on some sort of like puppeteering or something for this. So I just don't know like how much was visual or how much was like VFX versus like a puppet sort of thing.
Right. I'm like have the episode on as we're talking about this and I'm turning my hands into Grogu ears because I'm watching the scene where Grogu is flying in his pram and his ears just are going flying in the wind. It's very cute. But what I'm about to say is that about our Hell Grievous, he has like a very human eye. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
But it's like he took an eye from a human or humanoid person, made that his eyeball brain. And I was really unsettled by that because it's got like, it's clearly a single eye that's part of a two eye set that has like wrinkles and shape to it. And I don't know, I was like, what is this?
And the ground is littered with Mandalorian helmets. So yeah, it's like, does that eye belong to a former Mandalorian?
It does. You know, okay. Like, but is it's just interesting. Is it the shell of the former, you know how like, but you know those characters over time who like become less and less human because of the like modifications or they're like trying to survive past human lengths, like Cassandra in Doctor who like is at the time of the world ending, like a literal stretch of skin, and she yells moisturize me. And like Saw Gerrera is like losing his humanity over time because, you know, he's got like more machine than man sort of vibes. Darth Vader, stuff like that. That's the vibe I get from Hell Grievous. It's like, what if that's the last remaining part of that particular Mandalorian? Like, and they're just trying to survive. Although that's probably not it, because there's really not been that much time between like then and now. But still, I don't know. It's unsettling.
Well, and Grievous too was like a former human who like modified himself a lot.
He wasn't a
right?
human.
So he was. Yeah, he used to be like a humanoid creature, basically, and like modified himself so much to an extent where he became like a robot, and that's why his eyes and his, you know, he has like the lungs and the heart and everything, because those are the only like remaining parts of him. So that's why I identified with Grievous when I saw this new creature, because I was like, oh, that's like, I don't know. And he just like moved like Grievous. It was very, very fascinating, but really terrifying. I thought the fight with Bo-Katan as well was just so freaking epic, like when she picked up the Darksaber and started using it.
I was like, this is the moment.
It's so clear like how fluidly that she uses that blade over Din Djarin. Because when Din uses it earlier, it's very heavy. He's like very clunky with it. He can't really swing it around as easily. And it kind of echoes back to the Book of Boba Fett, where he was training with the armorer. And she was saying that you're fighting against the blade. Like you're trying to like make it bend to your will, but you have to kind of like flow with the blade, right? And even when like Sabine and Kanan train with it, Sabine starts to say like, oh, it's feeling lighter, and Kanan's like, well, because you're connecting with it and it's becoming a part of you, and you're using yourself and the blade, not just the blade, right? Din Djarin's just using the blade, that's why it feels so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so it's really interesting to see like Bo-Katan is clearly the more skilled user here, and I wonder if the Darksaber will fall back into her hands, and if Sabine comes into the picture this season. That's going to be like a very awkward, not like a love triangle, but like a Darksaber triangle. It's going to be real freaking awkward if Sabine's there, because they're all like, you know, who wants the Darksaber the most. Although I think Sabine has kind of relinquished it to Bo-Katan in Rebels. So I don't know if she would want it back.
I don't know if she, like, after everything that has happened, right to the people around her. I don't know if that's her. She's interested in that, like at this point in the story.
She could train. She could train Din though, which would be kind of an interesting, interesting twist because she learned from Kanan, and you know, I think that would be very interesting if Sabine popped up somewhere in the season, and I think that is probably highly likely at this point. But regardless, I want to go back to also like the beginning of chapter 17 the ceremony that they have and just sort of us talking about like what could happen this season. And I thought it was a very specific choice as they're going through the words of the creed where it says, I swear in my name and the names of the ancestors that I shall walk the way of the Mandalore, and the words of the creed will be forever forged in my heart. And just as the kids start saying, and I shall never remove, that's when the alligator comes out and attacks everybody. And I just find it really interesting that that is specifically the line that is interrupted and cut off. And I think it maybe is symbolic in a way of what will happen to the way and the creed this season. Like, you know, cut that part out. Let's stop it there. Let's end it there.
Burn it.
I think that is maybe where we're going. Because the armorer also told Din in the Book of Boba Fett, the songs of eons past foretold of the Mythosaur rising up to herald a new age of Mandalore. Sadly, it only exists in legends. So, like, if the Mythosaur is real and it's going to bring in a new age of Mandalore, like, maybe that's finally Din's catalyst to be like, okay, now we're going to create a new way. No more helmets on, like, no more following this specific creed, like, maybe things get shaken up in a whole new way because of the Mythosaur. And I just thought that was maybe a little bit of subtext happening there, that specific line getting interrupted.
I think that's like definitely a sense of foreshadowing here. And I don't think that like Din is going to willingly change.
There will be resistance from him for sure. Like he needs to snap out of it.
Can tell the way he's still speaking and the way he's still moving and the way that he feels despite everything that's gone on with the armorer and what she has said to him, that he like really feels the need to go to the living waters. And I think that like he's going to need other people to continue to push at him in order to like try and work through and shed some of that like religious trauma that he has from the Children of the Watch. And I think like Bo-Katan is somebody who can push him in that way because they're different, but they have a lot. I mean, they do have similarities. They have commonalities that they can rely back on. And now they have this one moment as well of both seeing the Mythosaur and how that affects the pair of them, I think will be really interesting. And I think could breed positive conflict, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I gotta say too, shout out to the N1 Naboo Starfighter. You will always be sexy. I love you.
She is, as much as, I mean, I think it's ridiculous that they blew up the Razor Crest. Different story for a different day, but like, as much as I'm like, really? The Naboo Starfighter of all things you could bring back? I am like, man, she's hot. That's one hell of a ship. She's shiny. She's pretty. I've seen her in real life. She's gorgeous. Little Grogu in the little astromech pod. Just go tap, tap, tappy, tap. That's some cute shit. They knew what they were doing there. And I can't even be all that upset about it. So you know what? You got me there.
We got to see the full Razor Crest at the Mandalorian exhibit at Celebration. Dude,
it's so
amazing.
Cool.
That was like one of the coolest things I've ever done. That was so fun to walk through that together. You got your picture with Kersantan. That's all
like,
that mattered.
That was the impetus for me being like, screw all my Sunday plans. Yeah, I'll go to this exhibit for you with you, Brad. Like that was honestly like the most right choice we could have made maybe the entire weekend, because oh my God, that exhibit was so cool. And we got to see, you know, like all of the props and costumes and masks and the mechanisms of these characters. Like what a cool thing. I hope they do more with those things. Like I hope they show up in other places or tour that exhibit, because seeing some of the creature designs and the props really gave me a greater appreciation for the way that they were designing this world. And it's cool to see like the N1 Starfighter, you know, back in the story. You know, like back, it's cool to see it in person, and then it's cool once you've seen it in person to see it back in the context of the story.
Yeah, I loved watching it swoop in and kill the crocodile, and the moment where he lands and it's like just the Mandalorian. I wonder for a viewer who didn't watch the Book of Boba Fett is like, oh yeah, he's missing the kid. And then Grogu pops out of the cockpit. When I watched it on my second viewing, part of me was like, you know what? I kind of like the chaos of that reveal where Grogu just pops up in the back and is like, hey, I'm back, you know? It's just so kind of just funny of like, okay, yeah, I guess he's back in the mix.
And my God, he is so cute. He's got his ears like up and his hand like up. He's like, hey guys. Oh God, it's adorable.
Yeah, so that was like a little fun reveal, how they pulled that off. And just to like the Naboo Starfighter, it's very clear in Chapter 17 how much of a handle Din has on the ship. I think Rick Famuyiwa directing Chapter 17, I love having Rick back in Star Wars. I know he's an executive producer this season, which is totally warranted because he's been one of the better creatives on The Mandalorian. And he directed the hell out of that action sequence at the end, the way that the N1 like swoops in and out of the asteroids and kind of has that moment of pause before the explosion and the reveal and the cue of the music of the Mandalorian theme. And that was just so cleverly crafted. And every time I watch it, I have a smile on my face and I tear up a little bit. Cause I'm like, this is just so good. This is just like Din showing off his mastery and like Grogu's in the front seat being like, yay, you know, like,
yeah.
My dad's killing people. Yay. He's killing pirates. I love it. You know, he's like, never trust a pirate kid. You know, it's just so good. It's good freaking Star Wars, man. I love it.
Yeah. I will say that chase scene was really exciting and fun to watch. And, you know, a good like asteroid, you know, chase is something I'm never going to say no to. That brought us the seismic charge. Okay. That's all I need to say. We don't need to go any further. That's why those scenes will always be iconic, whether they have a seismic charge or not. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And we did get a seismic charge in season two from Boba Fett's ship as well, which was great.
Absolutely correct.
The soundscape of The Mandalorian in general is just like, hey, prequel kids, guess what? We got you, fam.
This one's for you, babes.
We're gonna feed you every 5 seconds. And now that we have the N1 in the mix, it's like... like N1 starfighter noises constantly. I'm just like, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
Totally.
So good. So good.
Before we like go back to chapter 18, I really do want to take a moment to talk about Greef Karga.
Yeah, okay? Please. And Navarro. Yeah, absolutely.
So I didn't recognize Navarro. I mean, you told me it was Navarro, but I wouldn't have recognized it because it obviously has got some different vibes from when we last visited.
Yeah.
And it's also been a while for me. And I just have to say, my main comments here are that Greef's new outfit is very iconic and that I think we should all have little dress holder droids, cape holder droids, droids that will hold up the end of your pants, like the you know, the bottom of your pants when it's wet outside and you don't want to get your pants wet, okay? And you're wearing like a pair of wide leg jeans, okay? I'm just thinking about it. The potentials here are endless. That, and then I really also found it kind of funny. Okay, well, I think one of the greatest Grogu moments ever. First of all, when this scene came out all on its own, like on YouTube, I was like, this is some of the dumbest... This is some of the dumbest stuff I've ever heard in my life. Like, why is this the scene we're showing? I think you recall my reaction. I was like, literally, what is this? But then I watched in context. I was like, okay, I get it. I get what we're going for here. I get the vibe of this scene. I understand why, why he's kind of proposing this in this way to him. But man, Grogu spinning around in that little chair, just with the force, he just keeps spinning.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God.
It's so good with his little hand.
Pinch his little cheeks. He's so cute. Ugh, ridiculous.
Grogu's puppeteering has just gotten better and better. Like, that is just one thing you can never fault the show for, is like the puppet looks so freaking amazing.
For real.
It's so good.
For real.
I'm always impressed by what they're able to pull off. And now that he's moving more and doing more, I think they're really utilizing the puppet and not like over relying on CG, you know, too much CGI. Although we do get a couple flippy Grogu's.
We do have multiple flippy Grogu's. Yeah, he's using the capital F force to do capital F flippies.
When he flipped out into Pelimato's arms, I was like, oh, boy's just going.
And then he flips out into the pram in chapter 18 too.
Yeah. And then he just like spins it around with his little buttons and he's just zooming.
He's just going.
Freaking zooms like, out this of there. Is my like, car. I was impressed. Yeah.
Okay.
I was like, that was the cutest damn thing I've ever seen in Star Wars. He's just like going.
He's just aggressively and the music cute. Too.
The music was pretty good for that moment. I got to give shout out to Joseph Shirley who took over composing for Ludwig, but I'm pretty happy with the music still. And Mando, I think it was really fun and exciting.
Yeah, definitely. Before we go back to Grogu, because now I'm watching the scene, the creature design, Nyctos. As we know, Sarah is a fan of the Nyctos. Brad is a fan of the Nyctos. And I have to say, this practical Nykto looked pretty good. That's it. That's all I have to say. Thank you. Bye. Grogu.
Yes. When are we getting Niku live action, please?
I feel like he'd be a lot scarier than intended because like the Nyctos actually kind of have a strong look to them. And Niku's a little cutie pie, but but like I thought that practical makeup looked pretty good and was menacing in the right way for that character. So anyway, back to Grogu being cute.
Well, I do want to say a couple other things about Navarro real quick. I do think like while it was a good refresher to be back there and kind of catch some of the viewers up about like what's been going on, especially with especially with Marshall Dune, who was recruited by Special Forces.
Oh my God, that line was so funny. That line was so funny.
That was like actually hilarious that they brought that up, and I was like, God damn it! It's like I just hope they recast the character because that would be honestly great if they just recast it and we just forget. We just forget about Gina Carano ever again.
I was just like, they have to say like they. I understand why they felt like they had to say something, but they really didn't. You know, like.
I love the Poochie went back to his old planet memes constantly, and I saw somebody like redo the meme from Simpsons, and it was like Poochie was recruited by Special Forces, and I was like, God damn it, Twitter never misses. But anyways, I think Navarro like showing how like vibrant and lively it was. Like you have bards, you have like droids and creatures, and you had the one chef droid from Book of Boba Fett in Jabba's palace. I don't know if you saw that in the background, but he was like chopping shit up, and I was like, oh, I don't know if that's the same one. Is he gainfully employed now on Navarro? Who knows? But I thought it was really cool just to see like how Din's choices in season one helped to give this town like a whole new rebirth, and like the way that he aligned himself with grief led to this new beginning for Navarro. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of made me realize like, okay, like season three is about new beginnings. It's about a new way of doing things. And for like grief, he's like, you know, tell your pirate lord that Navarro is respectable now, is not to be trifled with. Like that's our way now, right? We're not with the speakeasies and the bars and the bounty hunter guild. Like that's not who we are anymore, right? And so I thought that was really representative of like what this season is going for. It is about new paths forward, and Navarro is hugely representative of that. But most importantly, on Navarro we get the Enzalans. And we get IG, IG-11.
I gotta be real with you. I had completely forgotten about them between that last week and this week because I felt
there's
like this
so
week's
much,
episode was
so much
good
stuff.
But oh my God, when Grogu is like just gonna squeeze the ever living shit out of that Enzalan, it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life.
Oh my gosh, did
I groan when they showed up? Like yes, okay, yes. But was I immediately endeared? Also, yes. I was like, they're just so small.
I love them.
They're literally just, okay, in that moment when grief, like, it's, okay, so you're like watching them, you're watching the Enzalans, and then it shoots to a shot of grief who is now on his hands and knees with his like face turned into the, their little like workshop. And then it cuts immediately to a shot of Din sitting cross-legged, like cramped in this little workshop. That's comedy. That's comedy.
Yeah, and they're like translating back and forth, and Din's like, I got it. Like that was actually really, that like really worked for me, honestly. So good. And I also love that Shirley Henderson came back to voice the Enzalans. Like she voiced Babu Frick in The Rise of Skywalker, so she was back.
And I
love that. But I love like bad baby. He's like, sorry, he's young. Like, excuse him.
I mean, that was a literal absurdity, but like it was pretty funny.
Not as absurd as like Mando tossing Grogu through the air into Grief Karga's arms when IG-11 tried killing him again. Like, what was going on in there? I do wonder like what the whole IG-11 plotline's gonna going to come out to turn out to be, but I think we'll come back to that eventually, because we have to come back to that, or else like chapter 17 was kind of like, what's the point? So I think that will be later in the season.
Right, because why did we go back to Navarro at all if this plot line isn't going to go anywhere? Like, why bring that character back up at all?
Yeah, I think we'll come back to a revived IG-11. I'll be happy about that, because I love that character, and like, he's kind of like Grogu's uncle, you know?
He is Grogu's uncle.
In a way, you know, like, I will never forget zooming through town and he's in the little basket. Anyways, that's kind of all I had for chapter 17. I know we talked a little bit about the Mythosaur at the beginning of the episode, and quite a bit. Did you have any other thoughts on chapter 17 before we kind of wrap up our thoughts on chapter 18?
No.
Outside of Mythosaur talk?
No more thoughts on chapter 17. I've exhausted all of my thoughts.
Great. Chapter 18.
Yes.
Being back on Tatooine, Bo-Katan Hot, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. She has... I can't speak on the podcast or I will be banned on all platforms. I love being back with Peli Motto. I think Amy Sedaris is like one of the most authentic characters in the show. She is somebody that I feel like is like so real. You know, like, I think when I talk about sometimes the dialogue is tilted, Amy Sedaris, without a doubt,
always
delivers.
Nails it. Yeah.
Every single time. And she is such a great addition to the show. She's hilarious. I love her being, again, like the aunt to Grogu. We have IG-11 is the uncle. She's the aunt. Din's the father. I don't know what Bo-Katan's going to turn out to be, because she has some fun banter with Grogu. Like, you know, what are you looking at, kid? You know, she's got some fun stuff going on there.
I will say about Tatooine and Peli Motto, like, I love she's like to the like earlier in the episode before we get to Din and Grogu showing up. We're kind of like setting up the moment on Tatooine. And she's like, and you got me working on the Boonta. This is a major holiday. I had big plans.
Do you think that's always been a holiday, or did it become a holiday like after Anakin won, and that like it became a bigger deal because he was a freed slave, and like then it like marked a huge
that's a great point
shift for the race, maybe. I don't know.
I think it's always been a holiday because like the people always came out for it.
You mean the Q-tips in the crowd, like the thousands upon thousands of Q-tips in the crowd?
That's absolutely right. I mean, it's a big holiday for Q-tips. Yeah.
Very niche making of joke there for anybody who got that. Phantom Menace.
Wow. You saying that makes me want to break open my archives book again.
Yeah.
It's so precious. Sure,
there's a picture of the Q-tips in there.
There's gotta be, but it's so precious to me that it stays. This is so bad. Like, I don't have like a place for it. It's a foot long. Or it's like a foot and a half long by a foot tall and weighs 16 pounds. Like, it's like a giant, book that you can't put it anywhere. And so I have it in its box on top of my bookshelf, but it's wider than my bookshelf. So it like sticks out a bit. I have to get it down from the bottom of the top of the bookshelf in order to crack it open and find the Q-tips. Anyways.
But yeah, it was a nice Boonta Eve shout out there. I love that so much. I love Tatooine Boonta Eve.
Is it me, or is Grogu looking like really extra cute in this episode? I mean, like,
100%.
His mouth is looking extra adorbs.
Extra teefy.
I don't know. Maybe it's because I haven't watched all the episodes of The Mandalorian. I don't follow, you know, Grogu content as so closely as others, but like, man... Sorry, I'm just playing the episode in the background on silent as we record this. And so I'm like catching scenes as we watch. And I'm like, dang, he's just really, really cute.
When he was zooming and the ears were flapping, I was like crying. I was like, this is amazing. This is the greatest Star Wars.
Insanely
I was like, this is so good.
Cute. Okay. But I think one of like the biggest kind of oh shit moments here for Din, and also just broadly for the lore, even though I think maybe the audience already knew this or already could have guessed that the surface of Mandalore isn't actually toxic, and that it has breathable air, and yes, everything on the planet is essentially destroyed, but it's not a lost planet to life, you know?
Right.
And so I think that was like a really key thing for Din to learn, obviously, that kind of challenged his thought belief about things. But I think that also kind of changes the landscape for what's possible for Mandalore in the future, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, and even more interesting is like Bo-Katan returning to this planet, because you watched Siege of Mandalore, so like you got a little bit of Bo-Katan fighting for her home planet, and I wonder when's the last time she's visited Mandalore. Like, did she truly believe it was toxic and poisoned and cursed, and she hasn't returned to it since the Purge? I wonder. And for her to go back and walk through the halls and, you know, talk to Grogu about her family, and, you know, she gives some background on how she gave her recitals when she was a princess, and the rituals were all theater for their subjects, as she calls them. So interesting. And she says such a heartwarming spectacle, like very sarcastically, like she was not clearly about the royalty of it all, and that's why she split off with Death Watch while her sister ruled, right? And so I love like filling in some of those details and learning more about her history through these conversations. But yeah, I wonder what is possible for Mandalore at this point. Like, will it rise? And I think that's the bigger question of the season, potentially, is like, with the Mythosaur, what is going to be possible for this planet? Like, will it reunite all of the factions that have splintered? Because that's so prominently talked about, is like, Bo-Katan's not the villain here. We thought she might be the villain of season 3, but she's not. She's just like, I'm sick of everybody fighting and killing each other for reasons that are too confusing to understand. Mm. I'm sick of it, right? Like, we have the Children of the Watch. We have Death Watch. We had my sister's rule. We have, like, now my own splinter group. We got you trying to go and bathe the waters because you don't want to take your helmet off. You're insane. Just take your helmet off. It's fine. You know, like, everybody's just has such different motivations, and I think like maybe the Mythosaur could unite all the factions again so that they're no longer under different banners. They're under one singular, like the original signet of the Mandalorians, right?
Yes, that's all some like really serious questions that are really thoughtful. And I'm going to interject with something really dumb. But are their helmets, do they have airtight seals? Because for real, Bo-Katan jumped right into those waters, turned on her jetpack underwater, found Din. They both came up for air, and yet Din did not take off his helmet. Okay, I have questions.
Din's committed. He's a committed man.
It's ridiculous. I'm like, but also, you know, when
the
like,
helmet does have a compression or a pressurized setting.
I guess that would make
sense.
When
he walked out of the ship and
it.
He like, remember when he, that was actually really cool when he walked out of the ship and you could like hear him breathing like Darth Vader almost when he's on the surface.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was cool.
Yeah. Okay. Cool, I didn't even think about that. Then puts makes sense.
I didn't know that until this episode that like, the helmets could do that. So,
you know, when you like wear a wetsuit and then you're like out of the water and then you're like, oh, I have to get this thing off of me. And you're like peeling it off of you. And they just are just, they have wet socks and they're okay with that.
Wet armor too.
I just have questions about how they survive with wet socks and like with wet hair, but they're not gonna, you know, dry it because they're not gonna take off their helmets.
Star Wars is ruined because Din Djarin did not bring a swimsuit to the waters beneath the mines of Mandalore.
He literally went in,
what are
in
you doing?
His entire armor. Like, what a choice, bro. I mean, I know this is like really unimportant, like truly unimportant, nonsensical commentary from Sarah. But like, this is what I'm thinking about. Like, he's damp.
Elzar Man would have had his pants off in seconds. Seconds.
You had. Why do you feel the need to bring up Elzar Man's pantsless self whenever you can? I don't understand.
Because it's like literally the greatest thing. We literally had a pantsless Jedi, straight up fact, canon.
I mean,
like,
it's
it
fact,
happened.
But like, you have to bring it up everywhere. It's very funny.
It's just great. He's my favorite chaotic man.
And
I
then
love
I have to think about it again. And then I get a little bit shy about it.
Speaking of shy, you're not the only person that's shy. R5 is a very shy droid. He's very scared to go to Mandalore. He's quivering in his boots.
Wow, you really, I'm so proud of you for finding a transition.
I feel for the little guy. We know he's got a bad motivator. Like, Can you believe?
I didn't even know that. I didn't even think about that until literally just now. So this is why I need you. I don't bring any thoughts to anything anymore. This is why I need you to provide me with thoughts and connections.
Can you believe that in an alternate reality, had R5 been the droid that Luke Skywalker chose,
none of this shit would have happened.
Would have never had a chance to go to Mandalore, or would Din Djarin have had R2-D2 out of Mandalore? Interesting. Interesting. What if? Let's ask that question. But I did like R5. I thought he was fun. I thought it was nice that he finally got a cleanup, and he had a little bit of a heroic moment. You know, like, we've always thought badly of him. Find out he fought in the rebellion, according to Peli Motto. She mentioned that he was a rebellion fighter. So
he's a real hero. And we just, it was right under our noses the whole time.
I love when Grogu jumped in the cockpit and he like starts pointing to the screen to R5, and R5's like, got you, boy. I got you. We're going. We're getting out of here.
Speaking of that, when Grogu comes to Bo-Katan's castle and Bo-Katan is like, I just want to be left alone. She's like, I don't want to talk to this weirdo again. He's so annoying. I'm going to go deal with him. And she's like, I thought I told you not to come back. And then like the thing opens and she's like, OMG, baby, where's your dad? Like, is he okay? He's not okay. Why are you here? Oh my God. Let's go get him. Like
I know Bo-Katan used to be a terrorist and she's got a lot of bad bones in her body, but I don't think she could hurt Grogu. And I hope I'm not proven wrong ever.
No, she's not going to hurt Grogu.
I don't think so.
Are the famous last words that you can like insert into the clip of, you know, like episode whatever when that happens. And
when
and
she just kills Grogu.
Right. And you just be like, Sarah, remember when you said this? And then you like hit the play button. It's like, she would never hurt Grogu. And I'd be like, and then I can be like, I was wrong. But no, I don't think she's going to hurt Grogu.
No. I do love Grogu in the cockpit, though. I thought I saw a funny meme on Twitter where it was like him sitting in the cockpit and there was like a sign on the window that said like, don't worry, the AC is on. He's listening to his favorite music.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, no, he's 50. Don't worry about it. he's a legal adult.
But also too, one last thought here before we start to wrap up shortly, but we haven't talked about some of their travels in the cockpit in space. How Grogu was able to move from the back seat to like the front seat and like cuddle up in his arms. I was like, of course that doesn't
built make into any the sense.
But I really love the moment. I thought it was really touching when Din was like, you know, hey, I grew up on that moon, and Grogu's kind of like looking around and he's so like amazed at everything. He's like showing where he grew up to his little kid. Like that's so wholesome. But we cannot forget to mention Chapter 17, while they're in hyperspace, there are freaking Purrgil, a lot of Purrgil.
Oh my God.
Flying through space, and Grogu is looking at them.
I missed this on the first watch, so let me go back in the episode.
I saw the best fan art, and I cannot remember who posted it, but it was somebody that was like, it was like Grogu in the cockpit, and then it was like Ezra with a beard and like Thrawn like hanging on by one hand, and Ezra's like, Calabunga, dude. He was like waving the Grogu, and it was like, this is canon.
Hold on, let me watch. We're watching the scene. I'm gonna catch it for the first time, maybe.
So I wonder if it like that is trying to like set up maybe an Ezra Thrawn sort of thing.
Guys, I saw the Purrgil. I don't know.
Exciting.
I wasn't paying attention last time, but I saw it this time, guys. We're catching this in real time with Sarah. I'm really sorry to interrupt you, Brad, but like, I see. They made this scene so long, and I think like by like second 20, I was like, okay, guys, I'm checking out. Like, this is a long scene, and for what? And it's for the Purrgil, and it's definitely a connection to other things for sure. Anyway, go ahead.
I wonder how the Purrgil will fit into all of it.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
I'm convinced Ezra Bridger is writing one of those as we speak.
He's just got like a little specific one.
Yeah, he's got like a little like a rein on it, like a Santa Claus, and he's just like riding the Purrgil, like throwing out gifts to people with Thrawn,
right,
for Christmas,
right? Because they're besties now.
They probably are. I'd be surprised if they weren't. They had a couple marshmallows around the fire every now and then.
Right, like maybe they have to share a tent, and like, you know, just because they only have one tent in this, it's just like
the single tent trope single for tent Thrawn trope. And Ezra.
But it's not like a romantic thing. It's just like you know, like the two opposites that are like, we refuse to get along, and then they're like, I guess we have to make this fire together, you know.
Well, that's like what happened with Kallus and Zeb, right? Yeah, I mean, they got stuck in the cave together, exactly, and then they became besties.
But they're married.
Yeah.
So
obviously,
I mean, Kalisev, they're obviously married. Okay, don't worry about it.
But I can't believe we talked about like how cool the creature designs were, and we forgot to mention the freaking Purgle.
It's because I didn't catch it on the first watch. Yeah. So that's why.
But they looked amazing. I'm stoked. I hope we get to see some of them like up close at some point.
See, that would be really cool because we've been talking about the creature design this whole time, and we really just got to see their outlines. They're kind of shadows in this. I think it would be cool to kind of see what they are really looking like in like the quote unquote live action setting. So
yeah, and even if it doesn't connect to anything, which I think it does, but still cool to see them just like how they fly through hyperspace, like kind of on the outsides of it, like they almost ride it like a wave, which is really cool. So I think that's awesome,
right?
Like Purgles were so important to like hyperspace travel. It's like why it exists.
Right.
It's because like I don't know what they did to the Purgles. Did they milk them like cows to get hyperspace juice? I don't know.
I don't like that thought. So we're going to pretend you didn't say that. Anyway, do we have any other thoughts on these episodes before we like end it? Because I think I'm just going to have to go I need to like get off of here and just like pretend we did not have this conversation.
I'm gonna cut it.
No, you
I'm
should
cut
keep
the Purgle juice
you should,
out.
You should really just keep this whole thing in.
Not the Purgle milk.
No, you should really just keep this whole thing in. This just a little bit of chaos for the evening, you know?
Oh man, yes. For those of you who stayed an hour and 10 minutes into this episode, you get a little chaos as a little treat.
You know what I said? I said, Brad, let's do an hour on this one, but we've hit the hour mark and then we just dived off the cliff, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I guess my last question to you, Sarah, is like, do you have any hopes for the season? I know we talked about like what your expectations going into it were, but is there anything that like for you as a fan who is casually enjoying the season currently that you think would be like a spectacle or like something that would really like pique your interest a lot and like be like, oh shit, I'm on board. I'm on it.
You ready to know my very serious answer?
Yes.
Smooches.
Okay. Who are you shipping? Who do you want smooches with?
I don't even care. I don't discriminate with the smooches. I just think there should be more smooching in The Mandalorian. I go back to episode 4 when Omera was about to take off that helmet. Okay. They were going to smooch and he was like,
oh, totally.
No smooching. And I think Din needs a kiss. I think he needs to feel that with another person. That's just my hot take. I don't really, lots of things can happen in the show, but what would really have me on board is if Din got a kiss or if anybody else got a kiss. People deserve kisses.
We keep asking like, what's going to make Din change? And maybe he just needs a little kiss. He's never kissed anybody. He's literally never kissed a single person.
Yeah. We hit the hour mark and I just was like, what does the show need? Kissing.
I would like a romance. I didn't think I'd be doing this, but I'm kind of already shipping Bo-Katan and Din a little bit.
Ooh.
A little bit, yeah. It'd be very, very interesting. There's something going on there. She's like, I rescued you again, you know, like,
well, there's also
I rescued
that
you from the thing.
When he's like reciting the creed, when she's getting a bit emotional, like things are happening for her. And they may not, that moment may have not have been in relation to Din himself, but just kind of her remembering that memory and her remembering her life before and those sorts of things. But like there's some sort of connection between them that is undeniable in the ways that they're similar and in the ways that they're different. But I think that I think that Bo-Katan looks at Din a little bit every once in a while, especially in the end of this episode, and was like, I can save him, you know, like anyway.
Yeah. Anyways, I think that's the end of this episode. Big shout out to as well
me
to Rachel Morrison, who directed Chapter 18, which was a banger.
Yeah.
Her directorial debut in Star Wars. Very exciting for her. Love that we get to add her alongside some other great women who have directed Star Wars. So very exciting. Yeah. And Jon Favreau wrote both these episodes, which again, I think the writing could do a little bit better. And hopefully, you know, we'll get some other writers in the mix throughout these episodes. So
I think we have a different writer next week.
Noah Clore will be writing next week.
Noah Clore and Jon Favreau. But that's a new name to me, at least. So I look forward to kind of seeing how next week's episode plays out. Also, it's directed by Lee Isaac Chung, who is the director of Minari, which is an excellent film.
Yes. Yeah, that's like a huge get for The Mandalorian. Like that's kind of big.
I mean, it's an interesting choice of because Minari is such a quiet movie, you know. It's a quiet family drama, but I'll be really interested to see how he brings his aesthetic and his style to the Mandalorian style.
Looks like it's the first episode of television he's ever directed as well.
Oh, we love to see it.
So it'd be his TV debut. Yeah. We got some really good directors in the mix. We got him, Carl Weathers, Peter Ramsey, Bryce Dallas Howard is directing the Celebration episode that's happening during that week. And then Rick Famuyiwa, the last two episodes. So like
Peter Ramsey will be an interesting one, I think, too, especially.
Yeah. We got some good Mando coming up, and I'm very excited for all of it. So stay tuned for more of our coverage here on the pod in the coming weeks.
That's right.
It's going to be a busy time.
Jarin Jargon.
I'm going to screw that up at some point.
It'll be funny when you do.
Yeah. I can't wait for next week, though. I'm so happy to have the Mandalorian back in my life, and I can watch little Grogu every Wednesday morning, be all cute and stuff, start my day. So,
you know,
what a treat.
Brad, if you would have told past Sarah that she would have just enjoyed the past hour 10 covering the Mandalorian, she would have looked at you with a confused face. But I just had a great time on this conversation.
Look at us. Who would have thought?
Thanks for having on the Mando pod, Brad.
The Mando energy is good. We are getting fresh vibes this season. We're getting some new talents in the mix. And I think when you switch up the talent pool for the show, that's when it's at its best. When you get people like Deborah Chow and Bryce Dallas Howard and Taika, like those are some of the hard hitting episodes. And we're getting that again with new people, you know? So that excites me so much and for what's ahead. So if you want to hear more from us as we excitedly talk about the rest of this season together, you can follow us on all of our socials, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. You can follow Sarah and I on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Goodreads. And if you'd be so kind, follow the podcast so our new episodes drop in your feed and leave us a review so others find the show as well.
Yeah, we also have a Patreon.
Okay,
yay! We talk about comics on the Patreon. That's the only place where you'll hear us talk about comics. And also you get some other special episodes and an extra channel in our Discord server, etc., etc. We are very grateful to our patrons who help us make the show happen, you know, and have it be sound good and look good and all that good stuff. So thank you to Ben, Brian, Cheryl, Clay, Deborah, Dylan, D Sizzle, Emma, Huang, Jennifer, Knights of Friend, Leanne, Levi, Lucy, Lindsay, Matthew, Rob, Saber Bouquet, Santa, Sky Talkers, Stephen, Tom, and Travis. Thank you all very much for your support. And thank you to everybody who has joined us for the season 3-2 episode opening episode of the Jargon. Oh, gee, I messed it up. Jargon.
There you go.
I hope you've enjoyed this ride with us, and hope you continue to join us for this season.
Yes, absolutely. Well, until next time, everybody, this is the way.
Bye.